Hi there, and welcome to the YM Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Shaw. Our vision is to educate and engage apostolic leaders just like you so you can become more effective in youth ministry. One of the ways that you can support this show is simply share this episode with a friend. That's right. The greatest thing that you could do for us is when you listen to one of our podcasts, is simply text it, email it, Facebook it, however you communicate with your friends. Simply share that with a fellow leader. That's the best way that you can support us and help us get the word out about our show. Well, today is all about Move the Mission. Move the Mission, formerly known as She's for Christ, is the fundraising ministry of the youth ministries of the United Pentecostal Church International. And since its inception in 1953, over $134 million, that's wild, has been raised to fund missions and ministries all around the world. Well, what is MTM? It's a missionary having the vehicle he or she needs to carry the gospel to the furthest regions of their country. It's a North American missionary having a church building so that he can share truth with his community. It's a child finding healing in a future at Tupelo Children's Mansion or Lighthouse Ranch for Boys. It's also a student pursuing her calling and receiving Christian education through an MTM scholarship. It's also a child being placed with a loving family through New Beginnings adoption. See, when you invest in Move the Mission, you are intentionally sharing the gospel all around the world. And as youth workers, part of how we connect young people to the greater mission of the church all over the world is through getting them to participate in giving. It's one of the great ways to introduce them to the different things the church does to connect the gospel to human hearts. And we get an offering day coming up August 29th. And so this is the final push for all of us. And we're here to help you raise more than ever before for MTM. And I can't think of a better person to have this conversation with us than my friend Joel Johns. He's the youth pastor at Atlanta West Pentecostal Church and serves as the Georgia District Youth President. He's married to his wife, Alonda, and he is a dad to three amazing kids, Lincoln, Zara, and Nora. And today he's here to talk to us about MTM. Let's jump into today's conversation. Well, hey, Joel, it's so great to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us to talk about this really important subject of raising money for Move the Mission as youth leaders and youth workers. I just want to turn the show completely over to you so you can share with your experience and what you got in your heart today.
Thank you, Adam. It's an honor to be here with everybody today, and I appreciate the opportunity just to share with everyone something that I'm passionate about, which is Move the Mission, formerly She's for Christ. I have a deep personal connection to MTM that really started at a young age. In 1987, at the ripe old age of two, my family moved from Jackson, Mississippi to St. Louis, Missouri, and my dad was hired to work at the General Youth Division, now Youth Ministries. So in 1993, dad was elected this General Youth President and served till 1995 when I was 10 years old. So I say that to say that my entire childhood was immersed into the youth ministry scene. Dad would often load up the family into our wood panel Chrysler minivan, and we would travel from youth convention to youth camp just around the country. And with so much involvement in the youth division, youth ministries, to no surprise, She's for Christ was a common household phrase. With a new name change and a rebrand, Move the Mission, one line of reason that has been repeated is, because what is a sheaves anyways? No one else may have known, but I'll tell you right now that the Johns boys, me and my two brothers, we knew what a sheaves was. But before She's for Christ or Move the Mission became a passion and a priority for me, it was something that I was familiar with. And it was something that was in the culture of my family. Well, not everyone's going to grow up with Move the Mission coin cans as baby rattles or building block toys. I say that with some exaggeration. If you're listening today and you haven't used some of those coin cans to build a tower at a youth camp or make a display at your district booth, you're just not living. But before you focus on fundraising, I do want to encourage everybody listening to familiarize yourself with Move the Mission and attempt to make it a culture of your youth group, a culture of your church and your district. To be successful with Move the Mission, fundraising must be more than just a function of your youth ministry. I believe that you can't approach Move the Mission as an obligation because maybe you have been elected as a youth president or a youth secretary, or because it's a requirement at as a district youth committee member, or even because your pastor asked you to lead MTM in your local youth ministry. It cannot be an obligation. Somebody cannot just assign you a burden. So yes, fundraising to Move the Mission, it may come with a territory, whatever you may be doing in ministry, but it's vital that you have a convicting passion for what you're doing. If you find yourself viewing fundraising for Move the Mission in a loathing manner, and I know in jest, you know, we have a lot of jokes about fundraising and how terrible that can be at times. If you find yourself viewing, you know, fundraising kind of in that loathing manner, I want to encourage you to do with all sincerity a few things. First, if you are going to be involved in this is something that you're going to get involved with, take some time to pray. Pray and sincerely ask God, say, God, I need some understanding and I need a burden for what I'm involved with. I don't want just to haphazardly approach this. I want it to be something that I'm truly passionate about and I do with all sincerity. So pray. Second, take some time to become familiar with Move the Mission. Educate yourself more than just what you hear in some of the mainstream promotions about Move the Mission. Try to dig in, read the history of SFC, read a little bit about some of the elders and those who were impacted through Move the Mission in the early ages and what they did and how the inception came about. Study the different aspects of the ministries and impacts instead of just going to the website and then you're reading your list of ministries that impacts Tupelo Children's Mansion, Lighthouse Ranch for Boys. You're going down the list. Go to that website, begin to go to Tupelo Children's Mansion and begin to watch their videos, begin to read their history, their story, how their beginning started and how the Move the Mission is impacting Tupelo Children's Mansion. Study those different aspects and then listen and read the stories of those whose lives are changed by MTM. You know, there's so much power in a story. And when you become familiar and you hear these stories, it makes such an internal impact in others' lives and understanding for you when you take your time to familiarize yourself with Move the Mission. Third, make sure you lead by example and sacrificially give to MTM with your time, with your talent and treasure. God does something special when a leader really begins to make sacrifices and leads by example through giving. It's one thing for you to get up and promote and push and organize a car wash, but then something happens in the supernatural, the spiritual, when individually, by example, you begin to sacrifice and you begin to invest in She's for Christ. We've seen that in our church and our pastor, my dad, he mentions that and talks about how in certain services, there's a point where God really moved him to give in a sacrificially way. And because of that, it broke something in the church and then began to flow and, you know, great things happened through Move the Mission because of that example. But over time, the heart and treasure principle from Matthew 6:21 will begin to unfold in your life. So my prayer for you is that your view of fundraising for Move the Mission would move from an assigned obligation to the awareness of a great opportunity to make an eternal impact in the kingdom of God. View it from obligation to opportunity. As I share the history of She's for Christ and my involvement, in 1995, my dad, he became the pastor here in Atlanta, Atlanta West Pentecostal Church. And when he came from the youth division as the youth president, raising money across the country to a church who hardly had given anything at all to Move the Mission. He had to beg the church for their first offering of $1,000, which was given within 1 month of him being elected. But every year since then, for the past 25 years or in the 26th year of him being the pastor, we've taken time as a church every single year to focus on Move the Mission. Every year for 25 years, we've organized a walk-a-thon, or now we call it a move-a-thon at our church, that has raised between $20,000 upwards of $40,000. This year, we fundraised $30,000 in our move-a-thon. But every year, we promote the sacrificial offering service. And year after year, our church has focused on Move the Mission with intention and with purpose. But over time, because of that, it has created a culture of fundraising and a culture of sacrificial giving in the church. We often bring in a special speaker as a vision and a passion for Move the Mission. Then after 20 years of giving in 2016, Brother Michael Enzi preached a tremendous message at our church. It was titled, Your Miracle is in the Bag. And after all of those years of intention and purpose and giving and promotion, something broke in our church. And that year, the church gave a sacrificial offering. It was truly a sacrifice, a miracle offering of nearly $110,000. And over the past 5 years, we've continued to see miracle offerings in our church. So people always ask, and they come up to me, you know, when they hear an announcement of an offering, say, so you guys have some really rich people in your church, right? Like basically, like I know, you know, it's got to be a few millionaires that gave a huge chunk of the offering. Everybody else gives a little bit more. How else could those offerings come in? And we do have some that are blessed in our church, but our sacrificial offering in no way represents just one or two individuals giving this huge offering, the rest of our church making up a small difference. The sacrificial offering represents many individuals with varied amounts of sacrifice who have caught the spirit of sacrificial giving. This ties back into what I'm saying, that it's not on accident. It didn't happen overnight. It wasn't all of my doing. It was intentionality from our pastor. The catalyst, I believe, was the power of the Word of God and a great move of the Holy Ghost with Brother Michael Enzi preaching. But then it was a result of intentionally creating a culture of giving and fundraising in the church. For some of you, this may be your first year truly raising Move the Mission. And for many churches have a history of this, but I want to challenge you not to be discouraged in the infancy of fundraising, but to make a mind up that you're going to begin something that's going to create a culture of giving and fundraising that years down the road will grow into something incredible through the help of God and His Spirit. And I know many churches, they take up an offering and whatever comes in, that just goes to MTM. We often use the word or the phrase, a token offering, which I don't care for that much at all. I know others who don't take them an offering, but whatever is given purely comes from what the youth group raises through fundraising or car washes. While our church has been giving sacrificially, we would never quit fundraising for Move the Mission. Our fundraiser of choice is our annual Move-a-thon. It's a 5K for adults, and we do a 1K fun run for kids. But we believe in fundraising, even though we give a great amount in the sacrificial offering, but active fundraising, because it connects the hearts and it connects the hands to the mission of the church in a really special and a tangible way. Kids may be able to give some sort of money, but typically don't have an income. Most students don't have an income where they're able to sacrificially give. But by having a fundraiser, it's actively connecting hearts and hands in the mission of the church and Move the Mission. And it's all a part of intentionally creating that culture of giving from a very young age into students, into young adults and adults. And it's been with them for many years. And then that bleeds into the sacrificial offering, because for many years they've already been investing in a certain way. I'm raising money through fundraising. And then when it comes to sacrificially giving, their heart has already been pursued. Their heart has already been involved and Move the Mission. So the sacrifice comes. But more than any, uh, when, when it comes to fundraising, what works at Atlanta West, I understand, may not work at your local church, but there are many fundraising avenues that you can pursue for Move the Mission. More than any generation before, there are endless amounts of resources that can be found with just a little bit of research and sweat equity. Well, finding fundraisers for your local church is possible. It's not an impossible task. But for many, I found that finding that right fundraiser is not always an information issue, especially in the day that we live in. Oftentimes, it's an inspiration issue. So I challenge those listening today to read, research, connect with others on social media, share ideas, and as some say, steal from the best. When it comes to finding the right fundraiser, most of the times it's not an information issue because there's so much out there. It's an inspiration issue. Make sure you put in that hard work and your challenge to find that perfect fundraiser that works for your church. As you do decide to fundraise and you do go after that, my input would be when it comes time to organize a fundraiser that you would pursue that fundraiser with energy and excellence. Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, whatever you find your hands to do, you do it with all of your might. Colossians 3:23 says, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Our discipleship pastor, he's a former Georgia youth president, Brother David Jury's ingrained this simple line in our church, that your best belongs to God. And this is true when it comes to fundraising. No matter as a youth minister, if it's developing a personal relationship with God, if it's preparing a Sunday school lesson, a Wednesday night Bible study, your best belongs to God. And no matter if it's a lock-in, if it's a youth trip, or an MTM fundraiser, I truly believe that your best belongs to God. So I want to challenge you today that as you go about fundraising, work hard at whatever you do. Get rid of that's good enough mentality. How can I make this the very best fundraiser? Because I'm not just fundraising for another organization. I am fundraising for an eternal cause, a kingdom-minded mentality. Read and research, network with other youth workers, build a team in your youth group and your church, creatively think through your fundraiser from start to finish, from top to bottom. Oftentimes, I try to visualize that fundraiser. We think about how it appeals to the five senses. What does this fundraiser feel like if I'm there in the environment? What does it look like when I'm walking up or I'm interacting in the fundraiser? What does it sound like? Is there awkward silence? Is there noise? Is there music? What does it taste like? What are we serving or preparing at that? What does it even smell like when it comes to grilling out maybe for our move-a-thon when people walk up to that? Think about how all of those ways. Think through that creatively. And I challenge you to take your Move the Mission fundraiser to the next level simply by approaching it with energy and with excellence. The last thing that I want to mention to you when it comes to fundraising and giving to Move the Mission, and that is this, that it's not about sums, it's about sacrifice. I'm often hesitant to mention the sums or the amounts that even our church raises or gives to Move the Mission, because oftentimes people take that wrong and however that may be. But I know it's important. That's important to celebrate wins no matter what church environment you're at. But I also don't want to discourage others who get so focused on the sum total and they fall into this comparison trap. If you have your best belongs to God mentality, and you approach that fundraiser with intentionality, then you should never compare that fundraiser amount or your offering amount to other churches. If we've learned anything from the widow's offering of two mites, mentioned once in Mark 12 in the Gospels, it's that we learned from that, that other rich people from that story gave larger amounts. But in the story, we also see where Jesus replied that this poor widow has put in more than all of those who have given. And Jesus, he clearly set the record straight that it's not about sums, it's about sacrifice. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to be a part of this podcast. And let me share a few things about Move the Mission, about fundraising, about making sure that when you create a culture of giving, become familiar with Move the Mission. Make sure you move from obligation to an opportunity. Create that culture of giving. Make sure you're connecting hearts and hands to the mission. Do everything with energy and excellence. And once again, make sure that you understand it's not about sums, it's about sacrifice.
Well, thank you very much. That was some excellent content. A lot of practical advice and a lot of principle there for us to kind of dive into. And that's kind of what I want to do now, bro, is I just want to, from the launching pad of what you've talked about, let's have a conversation about creating that culture of giving and sacrifice. I think it's something that's really important, especially because MTM is a youth fundraiser within the United Pentecostal Church, that it's so important that we connect young people to giving and young people to sacrificial giving. I was reading something the other day that young adults or millennials, they're a little hesitant to give. They're willing to give of their time, but they're less willing to give of their money than previous generations. And while it's really good that people want to serve, I think we've got to find ways to break through the cynicism of teenagers and young adults and find ways that they part with their treasure and they sow that into the kingdom of God. I think that's so important. Now, that's what I want to talk about. But first, sure, kind of the first question we always kind of start with when we jump into the interview portion is we want to get a chance to know the guest. We want to get a chance to know you, Joel. So tell us a bit more about yourself and your journey into youth ministry. I think, if my memory serves me correct, that like myself, you are a veteran.
Amen.
We are grizzled veterans of youth ministry. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey into youth, young adult ministry, whatever demographic it is that you work with, or you work with all of them. Go ahead, bro.
Sure. Veteran, yes, worn and weary from youth ministry.
Scarred and damaged.
Oh, Lord, help us. Yeah, 14 years. This is in the midst of my 14th year. May of 2022 will be 15 years. And I love youth ministry. Enjoy it. It's calling, a passion. I think really with the early exposure to youth camps and youth conventions, I've always had a love for student ministry. I had multiple memories of these iconic youth camp services, one in Wisconsin, one in Texas, one in Louisiana, these camps that my dad was at. And, you know, that iconic camp service where kids are just pouring out their hearts to God. There's nothing like a youth camp service.
Yeah.
Those moments are forever like imprinted in my mind. And I remember telling myself, man, I want to be a part of something like this one day. Because growing up as a teenager, my dad's first hire at Atlanta West was a youth pastor. His name was Brother Shay Mann, who ended up being a pretty good youth leader in our organization.
He was.
Absolutely. He was incredible, not only on a national level, but on a local level. Just an incredible youth pastor. And he really helped me fall in love with youth ministry. And I think that's such a valuable thing, especially for our youth ministries, making sure that those kids have such a special youth ministry experience, because it can really shape and mold the way that they view ministry and especially youth ministry. And here at our church, Shay Mann involved me in the youth ministry, helped me through some of those difficult seasons as a teenager, as a PK. And I was like, man, understanding the value of that. As I felt the call of God in my life, there really wasn't a question of where my youth ministry would begin. It was just always youth ministry. That's what I always felt to do, just when I felt called in the ministry. Graduated from Gateway College, now Urshan, in 2007. So I did this Florida internship in Florida District to work at the campgrounds during their camp season. And after that summer, I was hired as a youth pastor that fall by Pastor Jody Wells in Titusville, Florida. And I really can't thank him enough for believing in me and giving me that opportunity to minister. It was a very special season. It's a young guy with no experience. And I started my youth ministry career, just a handful of students in a small Sunday school room, a CD player for worship and altar call.
Yeah.
Occasionally we'd have revival and a hyphen kid would come in and play acoustic guitar for us. But we were able to grow that youth group, expand, create a youth center in their fellowship hall, and just a wonderful season of learning and experience. 2010, invited to come back to my home church as youth pastor. And 2010, as I mentioned, and just still serving, still ministering here with youth ministry, oversee, you know, and minister to our middle school, high school. We have a hyphen leader for the Zach Davey, and I oversee that kind of umbrella from middle school all the way to hyphen at our church. So
that's really cool. I have a similar origin story. I took over a Sunday school room. It was actually the preschool room where before we put in tile floor back in the day, there were some children that had incontinence concerns, as they often do at two and three. And so the carpet had seen better days. There was teddy bears. There were teddy bears on the plaster walls of the church, in the church basement, in a 65, plus year old building in desperate need of renovation, which since got renovated twice, actually. So it looks fantastic now, but it was, and though we put garbage bags up over the teddy bears and then tried to kill the lights with that, and then had a key lamps so that it wouldn't be like this Care Bear for Jesus collection over my left shoulder Ooh. While I was trying to talk to teenagers about God. And so, yeah, man, I totally get the started from the bottom that all of us in youth ministry, you always get kicked in, jump right in. At least in our day, I'm back in our day. You know what I mean? Young youth pastors these days are starting off, we sound like the old guys in the room. I remember back in my day, there was no such thing as a youth center. And it was a Sunday school classroom and these round silver discs called CDs that we would use for music. I mean, today they got in-ear monitor packs and all kinds of crazy stuff in their youth rooms.
Even here at Atlanta West, before Shay Mann had transitioned to building a youth center here, every week we would have to set up. We had these, like the classic apostolic colors of like burgundy and green. I don't know if there was like a salesman that went around to churches, in the apostolic faith of that season, because every church I've been to in that time, that green burgundy carpet. We had a little stage we'd set up and a trifold. We put our stage lighting, which were little clip-on lights, and that classic decoration for stage. We brought out the ficus trees and we put them on either side, little fake trees on the side of the stage, and we'd have church, man. The early years of youth ministry.
Those were the years. Well, one of the stories I found so inspiring in your talk today was when you talked about that move-a-thon. I have seen some of the photos online on your social media, your church's social media. I know that's a huge event for your church, where everyone pulls together and raises money for Move the Mission. And from the sounds of what you have raised on that move-a-thon versus what comes through year-long giving and through that big sacrificial Sunday, it's a significant chunk. And, kind of this episode today, we're winding down the MTM campaign. There are a lot of churches that like your church, they've been fundraising. They've done Move the Mission fundraisers already. But this episode, it's geared towards that student pastor, that youth worker, that has been coming up blank. Maybe they live in Canada like I do, and they've been on lockdowns until like 3 weeks ago. And now we all can go outdoors in our country. It's been beautiful. But they're scrambling for ideas. They see that offering date looming. And the idea of Move the Mission sounds like a way to unify the church, a way to get people together, as well as a way to raise money for this great campaign. So walk us through your planning, prep, execution for your Move the Mission so that those listening can go, you know, steal from the best. They can steal some of your ideas and use it in their own local church.
Sure. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a lengthy process to go into all the details. So I'll try to hit the highlights of it. But I will say one thing you touched on as far as like Canada and different parts of the country who may have, you know, the COVID concerns, and depending on what you're allowed to do for fundraising, with a move-a-thon, it is an outdoor event, which does lend itself, even for us, as we were coming off of some COVID restrictions early in this year. It was a great thing because it was focused outdoors, and there's a lot, of more loose restrictions when it does come to outdoor events. For those who are in a challenging area, this is a great, great concept. So we do a 5K and a 1K event. The 1K is for our kids, they're like 11 and under, and it's really fast and they have a blast. And then we do the 5K for those who are 12 and older. And one thing that we have found is back in the day, I hear these stories like, oh, you guys don't, we used to do 20Ks in the snow, you know, downhill, you know, uphill both ways. But what we have found over the years is those who are involved in the move-a-thon on a 1K and a 5K, a lot of them aren't doing 5Ks on the weekends. Most of them, this is the only real exercise they've gotten like that whole year.
I was going to say 5K sounded really long. Ooh. I was ready to do the fun run with the kids.
Exactly. So, I mean, back in the day, they're doing 20Ks, and then nobody wants to do a 20K anymore. And it's just absolutely killing those, especially those who, aren't active on a regular basis. So we found out nobody is going to give you any less money for a 20K to a 10K to a 5K. Now, a 1K may sound a little bit on the weak sauce side of things, but a 5K is a sweet spot. It's an enjoyable experience. It takes like, 30, 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes a little over that, depending on the pace. So it's not too difficult. So when it comes to planning, it starts the year before, for us at least, working with a calendar, finding the right day, time for the walk. Some of you may be jumping into this in August. So, make sure you're thinking through temperatures and heat index and water and all of that. We've done early May, which is pretty good for weather and just our calendar. And our church uses a project management resource called Basecamp, which some are familiar with that. And basically what I do over the years, I've created a planning guide for the move-a-thon, and I assign to dos for all the areas of our campaigns. But maybe you can pull a few things from this. What I try to think through every aspect of that campaign. So first, of course, you got to find out when you're going to launch your campaign. And then you need to back that up, have some dates of letting the church know. You don't just shock them like, hey, today we're about to raise a ton of money and guilt you into signing up, and put you on the spot. We kind of, hey, guess what? This is coming up. But I, of course, list out all the campaign dates, the service dates, the schedule. We let that, put that down. Then I get a list of everything that we may need as far as digital graphics. And you need to think through. So for anybody who, maybe it's yourself or for the workload of somebody in your church, all the digital graphics for the whole campaign, as far as media, photos, videos that you're going to need for promoting, because that's super important to promote in services. I have a foyer display and I need graphics created for that. So I need to give our media guy, that's my brother Ryan, a heads up on what I need for the media booth. What do you need for graphics? Are you need graphic inserts for churchwide emails? Or you need social media posts? What, so I lay all that out, all the graphic needs for the website. If you have a giving page, you need a logo on your website giving page, a banner for giving, list all of that out. I create a list of all the physical needs that I'm going to need, like a photo op backdrop. You know, if you want to have a cool photo op when people are taking pictures at the walk, maybe you need to make sure that you're ordering that ahead of time, that you're not putting somebody on the spot for design. Table signs, you know, people have to print off table signs. We do a big giant start here race banner for the walk, make it feel a little more official, you know, like a real 5K that somebody would do in the community. Sign-in sheets, fundraiser sheets that people receive when they're signing up to go out and get pledges. I think through all of those, and I have a list of print needs. I create then a media schedule and a wording for all of the posts, emails, calls, texts are going out the campaign. So you need to strategically think out, okay, I don't want to overwhelm our church, but strategically each week, or when the launch goes out, I need an email going out to the church on the day of the launch. And then a sign-up reminder for the next week, a strategic social media post, a call, a text going out to the church. And then those people who are going to a communication schedule. Then people who actually do sign up that want to walk and work, and I've got their information. We use QR codes. We use physical signups. Then I have a communication schedule. When am I going to communicate outside of a Sunday and a Wednesday to my teams to inspire them, to encourage them, to keep this in front of their mind? Then finally, I have a Move-A-Thon day of planning guide, and it covers everything from the layout of the event, the layout of the walking path, track. I create a volunteer schedule, all the names and time slots of areas of responsibilities for like the check-in team. We have like a little tent for food and continental breakfast items, food serving teams, a cleanup team, setup team, you know, people who are going to help order, pick up food, setting up sound, somebody who's going to help with photo and video of the event for future promotions and all of that. So finally, we have a follow-up plan. For announcing and celebrating totals on social media. Okay, so once we get that total for the day, we announce it to everybody there, but then we need to make sure that that's ready to put on social media. Somebody's got to be ready for that. And then the next Sunday, you got to have a slide and have that prepared to announce to the church. And then you need to inspire people to turn that money in that they've raised. This is just as important as your promotion leading up to the event, because we've learned that the phrase we use is that money committed doesn't always interpret to money collected. So we do a 2-week collection push, and then we award, you know, all of our top fundraisers for those who have fundraised. It's not a perfect plan. And once again, I can go into a lot of detail on probably each of those aspects. I want to hit the high level. It's just developed after doing this for many years in a row, and we continue to assess and take notes and just try to improve where we can. So.
That's excellent. I know there's a lot of details that you kind of drop there. But I guess my point in having you explain all that is, you know, for those that are listening and you haven't done something yet, if you act fast, now you got to act really fast. You got to, like, as soon as this, you're done listening to this episode, talk with your pastor and start moving quickly on that. But there is still opportunity. There is still time to do something, even if it's just with your youth group. If you have not raised anything yet. And so you're on social media, right, Joel?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So people, youth pastors that are listening, they can reach out. They can find a way to connect with you. What's the best way if they have any questions about this? I know you've shared some of these ideas before.
Sure. So I do, Instagram, I do Facebook, Instagram. It's Joel K. Johns. My wife has hijacked my Facebook account years ago. So it's Joel and Alonda Johns. You can hit me up on there. Or I have an email, jjohns@awpc.org. And you can email that. And I sent her a lot of information. So as Adam mentioned, I don't want anybody to say, oh my goodness, that's ridiculously involved. There's no way I can pull that off. This is your first year. Just try, attempt something. And maybe some of these things I mentioned will just help spark some creativity, and it'll help remind you of some elements that you can add and some things you can set yourself up for success. But don't be too, you know, let it be too daunting saying there's no way I can pull that off. You can pull some of those elements, organize it, promote it, make sure you're explaining the heartbeat behind it, the mechanisms of how to raise funds, the purpose of it. And you know, I think it could be a great event. You can do it. Just a few weeks left.
So today we're reaching for those that have not yet fully begun to invest in MTM. And I kind of mentioned it in the beginning of our conversation together, and that is millennials and Gen Zers, they like to be involved and they want to give, but demographic data is showing us that they're more likely to give of their time, which is great when you have move-a-thons, but they are less likely to give financially. And I think it's because, and I'm a millennial myself, albeit a aging one, that we're living in a day where people are really skeptical. They just are really skeptical to give to anything, let alone kind of large organizational type fundraisers, whether it's MTM or a host of just other, you know, other things that are out there. And so I guess you have caught the vision and the passion for this, because you don't do this as long as you have, and with the level of success that your church has had in sacrificially giving, without totally buying in to, without totally buying into this. And so what would you say to those who are hesitant to really sacrificially give? I'd just take a few seconds and just, I guess, just kind of share that burden. The people that are listening that may be a little skeptical.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to come up with the right words, the right pitch for fundraising, because there's so many organizational fundraisers out there. Within the church, just I'd start with the scriptural basis of the principles of giving, principles of sacrifice, the spirit of giving, the example of giving, the supporting of the apostles on missionary journeys. This is the culture of an apostolic. We love the apostolic faith, but apostolic giving and unprecedented giving and sacrificial giving is just as much in our spiritual DNA than anything else. We know there's more teaching on money than any other scriptures, but I try to help our church, share that scriptural basis and try to help our church picture the people whose eternity may be altered because of the giving. And outside of the church, I make sure there's preparation on the fundraiser's part to help students and arm people with resources, with websites, information on the history of Move the Mission when began around 1953, but try to share the integrity and the responsibility within our in which our organization and youth ministries handled the funds raised. And I love to share that none of the money that's being raised stays in that local church. There's no personal motivation. It's all going to missions and ministry around the world, and try to approach it from a spiritual aspect, a spiritual approach versus a secular approach, because, you know, people, you know, financial planners, it doesn't make sense when people give to Move the Mission when they give their tithes and the offering. It doesn't make sense. But we understand, we take it from a spiritual approach, a scriptural approach.
You know, you've had a long connection to MTM back in the day when it was, you know, SFC with your dad. Do you have any personal firsthand, you know, we talked a lot about stories. Do you have any personal firsthand stories or experiences that you've had about the impact of Move the Mission that you can recall?
Yeah, well, for sake of time, I'll keep it short. But in our church, when people begin to give sacrificially, there's going to be stories. And we have multiple miracle testimonies I've shared of the last few years that I've recorded that people have sent into us, and we've shared that. But one thing, MTM supports Office of Education and Endorsement, which basically gives Bible college scholarships for students. In 1976, a young lady from a small rural town in Circleville, Ohio, she felt the call of God in her life, but didn't know how that would unfold. Financially, she couldn't pursue training, but she was awarded an MTM scholarship and attended Jackson College of Ministries. And she married a young man from Miami, Florida. They started their life in ministry together because of that MTM scholarship. And that young lady from 1976 was my mother. So wow. That's one of our family's firsthand experiences, that her ministry experience and our family began because of a Move the Mission. So I would not be here if it was not for Move the Mission.
Move the Mission.
Quite literally.
I remember my wife and I were in, we went to Brazil to do some, preach at some youth conferences that were going to
that the Andersons were, Aaron and Tiffany Anderson were hosting. They're an amazing missionary couple. And I remember us being able to ride in their vehicle. They had just picked up their MTM vehicle. I think it was a week or 2 weeks before we got there. And I think it was a Honda. I'm not sure if we have them here in North America. It's like a compact CRV.
Okay.
And I remember, like, we had to use transit at one point. And in Sao Paulo, transit is intense everywhere. It's just a pile of people in a tiny space. But in Sao Paulo, a city that the metro area is over 20 million people. And I come from a country where there's only 30 million people in it. Wow. And there's like 3/4 of my entire nation lives in this city. And there is no United Pentecostal Church. At the time we were there, there was no United Pentecostal Church there. And they were there to go and start one, plant one, as well as do all kinds of stuff in the nation of Brazil. And I remember sitting in the ride shotgun with Aaron and thinking, okay, I've been telling people that this is real for years. I've been now a youth president for 8 years, getting ready to pass the baton to another person in this district conference. And at that point, this was about 3 or 4 years ago. So I'd been a youth president for 5 years. And I have told people about this. And here I am with a young missionary and his wife, and my wife and I are sitting in the vehicle that they will literally carry the gospel in, one of the largest cities on the planet, let alone one of the biggest. There's almost as many people in Brazil as there are in America, 300 and some million people. Wow. And just the reality of that just hit me. Like, it's something you could almost, the burden of it could physically, like you could physically feel. And now that they have a little boy, I can't imagine them trying to. I think they now have 2 or 3 churches they've started in Sao Paulo, plus a ministry that there's incredible poverty and drug addiction in their city, a ministry to those hurting people, as well as to the whole nation. If they didn't have a vehicle to be in. And so those experiences, as well as, you know, the story of your family, these are the reasons why you and I are passionate about this. And the reason why we want to help other people give. As a youth pastor, one of the things that we are always trying to do is we're trying to get young people to think biblically and lead from that principle of the Word of God, of sacrifice and giving that you talked about. What are some creative ways that you have inspired teenagers, specifically teenagers, to give sacrificially?
There's always the spiritual, and then there's the practical side. And I try to share those kind of stories, like you just mentioned. That's the first thing, is stories. Kids, you know, you can just share. A lot of people, they'll do a quick presentation. Oh, I have to, do a presentation for Move the Mission at camp or a youth service, and they'll go on the website and you hear them just read blah, 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 the top 10 every single time, but try to get a specific story. I remember many people have seen like that iconic video of Brother Dan Scott in Ecuador and talking about paving the roads to help minister these tribes in these remote parts of the jungle. And I was 15 years old, turned 15. My dad took me on a missions trip to Ecuador, and we were there at a conference that he was preaching, and I got to be with Dan Scott in Ecuador for that week and some of the other missionaries. And not only was I able to ride in the mission vehicle, which was a pretty surreal thing as well, but I got to be at a district conference of local Ecuadorian people who had been one and effective a whole generation that have been reached because of a missionary with tools and resources, investments of Move the Mission, have helped him reach that country. And so sharing that type of thing. There's always the spiritual. Use stories, use videos. They've done some incredible job, or the DJ Hill promotions at Youth Ministries, Motivation Monday, and they're putting out videos of students who've been impacted by Move the Mission, sharing those stories. Hopefully kids are going on AYC trips and recognizing the role that MTM plays, sharing that. But we also do some real practical things as well when it comes to helping get kids involved with Move the Mission. We've done silly things, challenges, guys versus girls, pie in the face of the losing team. That was a big thing back in the day. We do incentives by giving gift cards out, or at the walk, everybody gets fed a hamburger, but you get a steak dinner if you raise $200 or more. We've given out a bike. We've given out an iPad to the highest fundraiser. We give out reserved parking spots at a crowded church parking lot. If some of you have that church parking lot, it's always crowded. That family had the most raised, that student, they got a reserved parking spot. We've done district challenges. A lot of districts have great challenges. One of ours in the Georgia district, if you raise a minimum of $500, you can be a VIP at camp. And this right here, you have to find that hook of what really appeals to the kids. But this is one of the biggest motivators for some reason in our youth group, is to be a VIP at camp, because they get a special wristband at camp, which gives them front of the line access at all meals and the shower line at the dorms. And it gives them reserved seating at camp, an extended curfew at youth camp, and they get to attend a staff meal with a camp speaker. So
that is gold.
No, it's gold. That
especially the for those at youth camp that do shower, of which it is a sizable minority. Because we know, but still, there is only so much hot water that is available in those dorms.
That's right.
There's
That's
never right. enough hot water. And so that front of the line, that is golden. That's a great idea.
Oh yeah. So you find that hook, if it's something like a camp incentive, or it's a local incentive, but something that you can tell, man, my kids are going to be jacked up about this. They're going to be talking about this. They're going to be inspired. And that's going to be that big motivator, for giving. And, once in, they have to have the heart. We don't want them giving for a wristband. But then there is always a hook, and those things really make a big difference.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate your time so much today. This has been so helpful. And I know that you've served as inspiration to so many that are listening, just giving us some ideas in this final push for Move the Mission. One of the things we always ask every youth worker that's on the podcast before they go is, let's just be honest, youth ministry is crazy. It is just there's no other ministry in the church will have the stories that youth ministry has. There's literally, I my dad started a church. And so I have served in every avenue of ministry. Right. And I'm going to tell you what, bro, there has been nothing no ministry I could have ever served in that prepared me for just
God help
us. For the craziness that you experience when you work with teenagers. So everyone has a crazy story. Okay, we've talked about Move the Mission. We've talked about fundraising. We've talked about some heavy stuff. Okay, what's your story, bro? I want to hear your crazy story.
So, if you're a good youth pastor, you've made kids throw up over the years, with challenges and games. You can't call yourself a good youth pastor if you haven't done that. We've had kids get lost at, Youth Congress. I've had a kid tear an ACL on the stage on a crowd breaker. But my worst experience, one of my early years of youth ministry, and it helped me learn the value of research, trying things out before you use your students as human guinea pigs. But, the students love challenges. They love the opportunity to show off a little bit. And I did this as just something simple last minute, an ice challenge, where students could see how long they could keep a chunk of ice on the back of their hands. That doesn't sound too hard. So that was the first round, is a setup. They did it for like a minute and it was cold. But then the second round, we took it up a notch. And I was like, I remember doing this. Somebody showed me, one of my friends, you put a layer of salt on your hand and then you put the ice on top of it. It gets really, really cold. Well, I didn't really excel in chemistry in high school. And understanding and should have realized there's a chemical reaction that takes place when you put salt and ice together that drastically lowers the temperature, even down to like negative 18 degrees, I have since read. I knew it would be cold, but I kind of underestimated the toughness of those kids. They would not give up. And time kept passing. I started getting super nervous. And I realized what was happening. And I was like, all right, you're all winners, you know. But it was everyone too late. Wins.
Yeah.
They had frozen chunks, like squares on the top of their hands.
And oh no.
The following Sunday, these kids came to me like giant burns, like frostbite and scabs on the back of their hands. And years later, I went back to Florida as a youth convention and I ran in one of my former students and he still years later had a scar on the back of his hand from that game. So I guess you could say I left quite an impression of my first.
Yeah, you did, man. You left a mark in Florida. You left many marks.
God help us.
Oh man. I remember we had the bright idea of renting sumo suits, 1 year for, at like an afterburner event. And it was a very large event, but we only rented two sumo suits.
Mm.
And it was after like one of those crazy throw down church services too. Right. So everybody was really sweaty. And after, and it was like a 9, it was, or like a 10 to 1 a.m. or like one of those, you know, super late night things that I did very early on when I was in my 20s, but now would never do, because I need 7 to 8 hours of sleep. I'm just that, you know, kind of at that stage in life now. Amen. And so, those suits, I got in the suit. People were like, Adam, Brother Sean, get the suit. We want to fight you too. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to, you know, I was in my 20s. So I'm like, I'm going to get in this. I'm going to fight a teenager in a sumo suit, bro. The sumo suit inside was so moist from all of the praise break sweat. You literally could tell who was in the suit by how they smelled in the next room. That when they left, you're like, how was the suit, bro? How was the suit? And so it was awful. People had to leave early and go home and shower and then come back. And we had to let them back into the event. We had to give them like a wristband or something because they smelled so bad. Youth ministry is wild. It's crazy. Sometimes people get frostbite. Sometimes people get like a fungus or something from being in a sumo suit, but there's no other journey on the planet, no other place we'd like to serve than impacting the next generation and inspiring them, at least in this case, in the subject today, inspiring them to give and be a part of the kingdom. So Joel, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the insight. Your church has a legacy of giving that goes all the way back with your dad, and you have proven on the local level that it is possible for churches to give large sums of money when they put in the work and the focus needed to be able to move the mission of the kingdom forward. I hope this inspires all of you who are listening, and this year, your church, despite all of the things that have happened over the past 16, 18 months in the world, your church can make an impact on the kingdom and move the mission forward for the kingdom of God and see countless souls around the world saved, impacted, transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. Thanks so much for your time, Joel.
Thanks. It's been an honor to be here. Let's go make a big impact around the world to move the mission.